Hockeypulståget rullar vidare och ni ska känna er så varmt välkomna till ännu ett avsnitt. Nummer 90 i ordningen faktiskt, om jag är rätt ute. Och denna gång har tåget stannat till vid stationen i Ängelholm. För det är där vår nästa gäst befinner sig faktiskt. Och i detta avsnitt kommer jag, tyvärr, jag ber om ursäkt tyvärr på förhand, behöva prata utrikiska. Så nu vill jag helt enkelt stå ut med min högstadie- och gymnasieengelska. För dagens gäst är ingen annan än Chris Abbott, tidigare spelare i SHL och numera sportchef i Rögle. So first and foremost, Chris, welcome to the podcast. It's a pleasure to have you.
Well, thanks very much for having me, Adam. Happy to sit and talk hockey with you this morning.
Yeah, that's great. And I just have to start asking you to have some patience with me here, because there may be some slip-ups, so please have mercy on me here, Chris.
Absolutely. Thank you for doing it in English. I think we'd all be here for a little longer than we need to be otherwise.
Yeah, awesome. But I want to start this episode with looking back at the crazy and, for a lot of people, miserable year 2020. But if you just zoom in on the action on the ice, it was actually a great year for Rögle. So from your position you have as a GM and the perspective that comes with it, how would you summarize that year?
Yeah, 2020 for us has been one of surprises for sure, like everybody. We try not to, as an organization, as leaders here, look too much in the rearview mirror. You know, that's not the direction you're going. So just try and, you know, make the most of the situation. Of course, you know, along with a lot of teams in this league, had some disappointment with the way things ended last year prematurely. But, you know, overall, there's a lot of people suffering and a lot of people that have been, you know, a lot more affected than we have in Rögle here in the hockey world. So we're just very thankful to be able to be playing hockey right now. And obviously 2020 brought a lot of changes in the hockey world and the world in general, but just trying to deal with those as best as possible. And it's been a lot of fun to adapt as much as we can and as best we can.
Yeah, but how would you say the corona effects have affected you in Rögle as an organization?
Yeah, I think, well, you know, we try and take the things that happen, and that's one of the things that we've, you know, tried to present to all the players and all the staff here, is that it's not, you know, what happens, it's how you respond. And for us, it meant, you know, quickly trying to organize our thoughts about the projected impacts of this pandemic, and, you know, what it would have on our both revenues and in the sporting side, player availability and whatnot, and try and, you know, move forward as best as we could. And I thought through the summertime, you know, a little bit stressful, having some patience with, you know, allowing things to play out the way it has, but very happy, obviously, with where we are at as a team, and very proud of our players and staff for the way that they've handled the situation so far.
Yeah, but do you know at this moment how bad it will hit you, the pandemic, this season?
You know, you always try and plan for the worst, and I've just got to give a huge amount of credit to our CEO, VD, I guess you could say, Daniel Koch, and the leadership he's provided right from the first indication that this might be reality back in the start of 2020, or, you know, the first few months, and, you know, just the contingencies, the planning, but still at the same time maintaining a very positive outlook and positive attitude coming in each day, and our sales staff and working with our sponsors and our hockey team, and just being very positive, you know, towards trying to handle this better than the next team. And I think it's been the right approach, and worked pretty well.
Yeah, but if we change the perception here, back to hockey, I feel that 2020 was the year Rögle actually established itself as a top team in the league and a true contender. Do you agree?
Yeah, I would agree. I thought we you know, even 2019 there, it's hard to, you know, remember all the seasons, but I thought we got off to a pretty good start, if I remember. And then, you know, through the, towards the end of the year, finishing, I guess, third, time for second, whatever you look at it, I thought it was a good, yeah, a good step in the right direction for our organization. You know, we've had an urgency to win right from the first moment, being a, you know, privilege to be back a part of this organization, but knowing that, you know, it's going to be built over time. And I really thought last year, you know, as well as any team, you know, in the going into the playoffs, that we had quite a strong group and could probably do some damage. And yeah, disappointing at the time, and stung a little bit not being able to see how that would fare. But you know, you move on, and I think the rest of 2020 finished off quite well, and hopefully we can continue here in the first 4 months of 2021.
Yeah, and that urgency and strive to win, how big part of Rögle is that at the moment right now, you think?
Well, I mean, I guess what we would hope not to have is the you know, that learning curve that a lot of successful teams that you see in any sport, but certainly in hockey, looking at the NHL, even the SHL, of having to you know, to fail a few times before you win. And I don't think that necessarily needs to be the case, and we're hoping and working towards having, you know, a successful end of the season here. And we've got 20 games left, and we're not looking past those, but we also have you know, have our eyes on playing well into the springtime.
Okay, but if we take the helicopter perspective here, I think from the outside, Rögle has been maybe, sorry for this expression, but a loser club with a loser mentality for a bunch of years. I mean, top of Hockeyallsvenskan going up, then bottom of the SHL going down. And I think that's the main question here about Rögle. How did you change that? Because, I mean, that's the toughest thing, right, as a general manager in your position?
I actually disagree with you on that as far as the toughest thing. Not you know, in the, maybe the perception of this organization prior to, but I think the toughest thing for me would be to continuously, you know, be relegated and move back up. And I think, you know, three times it was, I believe, four times, you know, in 10 years, being able to, you know, sustain being relegated and maintain a strength in organization to go back up within a few years. I think that's the toughest thing. And one thing
that's a good point,
scare factor number one is, you know, being obviously established in the league. And so I give a, you know, I think a huge amount of credit first off to Anders Karlsson, and Maskin did a tremendous job, you know, my predecessor, in you know, continuing the tradition, even if the team had gone down, of excellence. I can't recall exactly how long Maskin was here for, but you know that he did a terrific job in bringing the team up, and all the people that have been a part of this organization since we'd been here in 2008-09. And you know, to further that, you know, us, Cam and I say, when I refer to us, obviously coming back here, having the opportunity to come back here was, of course, had, you know, the sports side that we were going to be working with.
Was it obvious for you, yes, to accept when Rögle get in contact with
you? Of course. I mean, who, you know, it's the situation that I was in. Cam was coaching in Vecchia J20, had done a great job working with that organization and their team, and taking them to the national championship game the year before. And I had just finished my career quite unexpectedly with an injury. So yeah, this was a great opportunity. It's something that we really, you know, were excited about. But I was just going to say that the foundation was laid, you know, far before we came here. Marcus Thoresen, the previous CEO, was, you know, very, should say, ambitious in his, very focused on creating a winning environment, especially on the business side here. And, you know, really set the wheels in motion to turn things around, and brought myself and Cam in late in 2017. So it was a very good situation to come into.
Yeah, but there's one thing to take the team from Hockeyallsvenskan to the top division, and there's another thing to take a club from the bottom of SHL to the top. And that's the thing that you guys have done here for the last couple of years. I mean, you didn't make the playoffs 2018. Then you were ninth in the league season afterwards. Lost in the, I think it was the eighth final, right?
Yes.
Yeah. And then last year you were third in the league and now you're top of it. So, I mean, that journey, what has been the most important thing for you?
Yeah, I think, again, first of all, you say we've done that, and we haven't. it's been the players that have done that, all the players that have been here, as far as I know.
Maybe you set the foundation for them.
Yeah, perhaps, but yeah. I haven't seen a coach or a GM score a goal from the bench or in the stands.
Okay.
Or save a you know, shot. I mean, it is truly all about the players and putting guys in a position to be successful and to believe in them and give them confidence. And we've just been, you know, extremely fortunate to come into a situation where we've got a, you know, tremendous, and Cam has said it, I've said it a number of times, we've had, we have the best sponsorship in the league, very, very stable and growing. And, you know, the city is just an awesome place to live, this whole area, in fact, of Sweden. Love the south and the proximity to other areas, you know, to Denmark and the rest of Europe. It's a great place to live, and the hockey culture here is mad. It's just disappointing, of course, that we can't have our fans in the arenas yet and through last year. But you know, that's those are the reasons there that we've been successful. It's been the fact that we've got so many great things around this organization, and the players have been very willing to come together and perform at a very high level, and I just got to give them all the credit, and it's been just a privilege and a lot of fun to work with them.
But I mean, there's a lot of organizations in Sweden that has great facilities, areas
sure.
around them, but they don't have the success that Rögle has had the last couple of seasons. Okay, success, you have been the top of the league, but you haven't won a gold medal, so
yeah, exactly.
I mean, that's the ambition for you, but what's the difference between Rögle and maybe some of the teams that don't have the success but stands on the same platform as you?
Right. Well, yeah, I mean, you nailed it there. You know, the success that we've had, unfortunately, we haven't had the chance to play a playoff game in Engelholm in 20-something years, 25 or 7 or whatever it is, and, you know, let alone win a playoff game. So, you know, the success has eluded us so far, I would argue, but, you know, I think we're on the right track. You know, the factors that lead into that, I mean, I think there's a lot of different things overall. I would say, you know, everybody knowing that, you know, you're coming to the rink to work each day, but first of all is to have fun and to compete and enjoy, you know, what we're doing, because you only have the chance as a player to do it for so long, and very few have the privilege of leading a group of young men like we do. So, you know, to come with a positive attitude every day, an excitement and a passion for what you're doing. And, you know, if you're not getting out of bed, jumping out of bed to, you know, get to the rink every day and to put that effort in and have that camaraderie with, you know, a group of like-minded athletes. And, you know, we obviously you don't have a place in our team. So, that's been a big part of it.
Yeah, but how do you create that developing environment?
Yeah, I mean, you set an example right from the start, and that, you know, comes with your own outlook and attitude and body language and whatnot. Try and be yourself first and foremost. I mean, you know, both as a coming from being a player and then working now, I think it's about being yourself and you know, setting kind of the agenda. But I mean, again, and I don't want to just, you know, deflect here, but this is the God honest truth, is that we've had some of the most ridiculously good coaching staff throughout our careers and our lives. I mean, not just in Sweden, and I will take an opportunity to thank, you know, and give credit to our coaching staff that we've had and mentors and everybody back in North America through in Sweden here. And I'll just, you know, most recently in Sweden, I mean, we've had here, as you mentioned, we had Bjorn Hellqvist as a coach, you know, to start our careers here with Peter Johansson, and then Roger Rönnberg up in Luleå, who is arguably the, you know, the best coach in Sweden, I would, you could say. you know, phenomenal hockey mind and leader. And then, you know, it was Jonas Rönnqvist and Bulin for 4 years up north, and Fagervall as well. And I mean, the list goes on, and HV71 with Joel Lindbaum. And, you know, it's been a pleasure to be able to work with those people and to learn from them. And we've taken a great deal from them. So credit to, you know, those, and most importantly, you know, the coaches that we've had through our youth and through our junior years, and especially college hockey. You know, we've had some terrific role models for us. And, you know, I know we have only so much time here, but, you know, you can tell me we've got to move on. You can edit it, but I really want to, I have to That's mention a few names, and that would be, you know, Brad Drury. It was a coach that we're still in touch with every day. Rob Curtis, back in Canada, junior coach, and Mike Schaefer, for sure, who's our college coach at Cornell. He had a huge impact on our development and how we see the game.
Way? Sorry, Chris, but in what way?
In what way? Well, I mean, he taught us. Coach Schaefer is arguably right now the most successful coach, or one of the most successful coaches in college hockey, wins percentage, his career, how long he's been there for. Some Swedes have been there. Doug Murray, I don't know how familiar you are with the.
Absolutely.
He was our senior. He was a senior when we were freshmen. Captain, monster of a guy. You know, we played a very defensive system there, and you know, you gave yourself to the team to win, and you know that didn't exactly set yourself up, or many guys up, for a, you know, stellar point production careers where, you know, NHL teams are knocking on the door for them. But, you know, you learn what it takes to win. And that definitely, you know, helped us in really establish a career on the professional side afterwards.
I think this is a great topic, because now you have praised a bunch of leaders that you have had in your playing career, and you have also praised the players that exist in Rögle this season. Because sometimes I feel that Swedish hockey as well, for the last seasons, have been a league driven by its leaders more than its players. Do you think that that's a good point of view, or a good take on it?
Yeah, I think there's some merit to that. Yeah, you know, you could argue as well, though, that there's, you know, the players have taken the front seat on that. I mean, there's what, 99, I think, in Swedish players in the opening day rosters in the NHL last year, 109 in camp this year. Yeah, for sure. I think it starts with the instruction, and Swedish hockey in general has been phenomenal at, you know, producing players for, you know, the highest levels of hockey in the world. And I think you could also assume that there'd be even more players, you know, had, you know, the NHL be based in Sweden. I think there's a lot of players that, you know, could be swapped out at the bottom of rosters, and you may even have more Swedish guys. So the quality is so strong over here. And I think there's, you know, more and more eyes being open to it. And I think a lot of the credit goes to the coaching staff and the leadership in Swedish hockey. And it really has been just an honor and a privilege to be a small part of that in the last dozen years or so here.
But if we go back to Rögle this season, I think that you have such a good team because there are a good mix of players from the local area that has star quality. You have some top talents with maybe Moritz Seider in the front seat of that talent car. And then you have some guys coming in from North America that has really, been a good contribution to the SHL. What is your strategy for building a great team that you obviously now have?
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, I had a plan or some thoughts coming in 3 years ago as far as how we were going to look at building this team up into a winner, and looking actually putting it down on paper and having a kind of a how would I attack this kind of mentality? And I say I shouldn't say that. Cam and I, you know, together, that was kind of the basis for our being hired, I believe. You know, in meeting with Marcus Thorsson and Värnamo and Stig's Cafe, you know, secretly back in November, October in 2017, it was, you know, here's our ideas and our plan, slop it down on the table and, you know, take a look at it. And if you, this is something that might be interested in, let's talk about it. And kind of left that meeting, I think, already setting the wheels in motion for, you know, the changes maybe in the approach that we would take if given the opportunity and the keys kind of to be able to do it. And
and after that,
what are those things?
Yeah, and after that, what qualities did you see that Rögle missed at that time?
Yeah, I think it's an overall kind of structure to, you know, how are you going to do this? How have teams in Sweden, successful teams, been built over the years? And there's a lot of different ways to do it. We happen to believe that, you know, one way was more common in the last 10 years, having been here and seen teams, been a part of a successful team. You know, you got to have young guys that are huge value and that are on their way to bigger venues in North America, as far as, you know, guys that are going to the NHL that are game breakers, if you will, at a young age and provide huge amount of value contract wise. You've got to have your very high end Swedish players that, you know, are at the top of their game, are leaders, have the history of success and of performing at a high level. Those have to be a part of a team. I think there's also, you know, a need for a lot of teams to supplement that with some, you know, top imports or import players in general, just to round out their roster. There's you know, that's arguable for sure. And there's many teams that have won without those, but often you find a few key pieces there. And then obviously a lot of young and I would say not mid-range as far as their impact, but just in their age and their career position, Swedish guys. And that's, you know, kind of four pillars that we kind of looked at from the start and built it accordingly. And, you know, overall, everything has to fit into a financial framework. And that's kind of your cap, if you want to look at it that way, or your overall budget. And how do all the pieces come together? You know, where can we find value and where can we improve? And, you know, at the same time, make sure that you're treating, you know, everybody. And I hope everyone that's left here, you know, is speaking well about Rögle. And that's been a huge focus because I've taken that, you know, with me from organizations that we've played for, specifically, you know, obviously up in Luleå and Houston. Did a great job up there in making sure we had very good teams over the years, and guys really enjoyed their time. And for sure, in HV71 with Johan Holt, I mean, you won't find an organization, I don't think, in this league where players leave Jönköping and have nothing but good things to say about that organization. Mm. And a big credit to him and Johan Davidsson for creating that kind of environment.
Yeah.
Even when it can be under, you know, contentious circumstances going out the door. And that's the sign of a strong team and strong leadership, is when, you know, they're your ambassadors, former players and people that have been around the team, and how they speak of playing there. And, you know, we tried to have a big focus on that.
Yeah, but I think the most important thing to be successful over time in Sweden, that's a thing that you have done here, that you have signed long contracts with the key players that has the passion for the club. I think about Daniel Saar, Dennis Everberg, Niklas Hansson, maybe I'm forgetting someone here, but is that maybe the most important leg to stand on?
Samuel Janssen, yeah, Matthias Janssen, Holgren, yeah. You know, Simon Reifors. Yeah. Yeah, you can. Matzo's more local, yeah, exactly. Now. He's been here forever.
But I mean, you have signed a lot of long-term contracts. Has there, yeah, that been a clear vision for you, that you want to establish a core group, so to say?
For sure. I mean, that's I don't want to, you know, not giving away any secrets, because people could see, you know, how we've, you know, the approach we've taken. But I think it's, you know, I've tried to do my best to look at, you know, situations and how would I want to be treated? How have, you know, successful general managers and teams in the NHL been built? And for me, it's, and for us, it's all about, you know, building trust and you know, that relationship between players and between everybody in this organization. We're collecting people. I mean, that's all doing anymore is can't do it on the ice. Unfortunately, would love to be playing, had, you know, a very rewarding career, but you're just collecting people and players, and you're trying to, you know, make sure that they share the same passion that you have. And also, the biggest thing that you know, can show that you trust them and you enjoy the way that they work and you want them to be successful, and you know, build that relationship, and hopefully they feel, you know, that trust and that that genuine, you know, hope for their best, and try and find a way to make things work, you know, with some continuity over time and not just kind of a one and done thing.
How do you find those players? Because a general manager is similar to a salesman, because I guess that you have to trust the player, and the player has to trust you, and that you have to sell the concept of Rögle for those players that you want.
Yeah, that's for sure. But I mean, look at it. I don't want to, I can't take credit for, we've got some incredible players here in our, right in our backyard that, you know, we've had the privilege to come into a, you know, a chance to work with them, and they've been, you know, at a point in their careers where they'd like to be here and playing in their hometown. You know, Matthias coming back to sign a 4-year contract, kind of get the ball rolling, and Dennis Everberg, you know, being a huge part of this team and signing a long-term contract to be here and having his family here. And it's just, you know, it's a very fortunate situation to have, you know, players like this. Daniel Czar, of course. I mean, he's, you know, and part of it is having, you know, known a lot of these players too. I mean, we've because of our careers, had a chance to play with them. So, you know, knowing Czar and the type of guy he is, and, you know, everybody, that's number one. You've got to be a good, you got to be a good guy and a good person. And there's, you know, that's kind of the 1A criteria for, you know, being considered to play here is, you know, being a solid person. Mm. And it's the same with Oliver.
It sounds
all
so
of our
simple,
players.
Chris.
Yeah, well, I mean, it takes work. You put the work boots on every day, just as the players do. I try and, you know, make sure you're very, very diligent about building those relationships, about following up and treating people, you know, even if you don't get them, you know, well, and trying to just build that concept and that brand up here, and making sure that you're professional as possible. But, you know, Niklas Hansen, having played with him and knowing his qualities, and Sammy Jonsson, having, you know, look at the steps he's taken, and yeah. Samuel Johannesson now, and, you know, Reforce. I mean, goodness, he's been here since, you know, his junior time. He's been, him and Samuel and Mattsson are the three guys that, you know, were here when we played. So,
but that's the impressive thing here, that you have a lot of juniors taking that step at the same time. And I think over the last couple of seasons, you have been the best team as well to develop your own players. How would you describe your organization in that matter?
I would say having patience and confidence, you know, showing players confidence. I had a really good chat with Seaman Reforce yesterday, and, you know, just to reflect a little bit on, you know, his journey, his development. And I think that's, you know, what we can and have tried to provide. And I myself, a very, very small part as a coaching staff that have, you know, nearly all the contact with these players, is just to give guys confidence, you know, to perform and to develop and to not be concerned, you know, on a day to day, if they've made a mistake or not, or if it's been a bad day, but just to have a long-term trajectory. And, you know, with that, as long as we see a positive team first attitude and guys that are doing it with a smile and want to put the work boots on every day, then, you know, we love those guys. And, Reefers is a great example. He's taken his game, you know, to a level that we've all not been surprised by, having worked with him and seen him, you know, throughout his professional career, you know, the steps he's taken. Samuel Jonsson, same thing. Mm. I mean, you know, it's a great example of for all of our young guys in our junior team to take note of. You know, it's that it's not going to come quickly. It's not going to come tomorrow necessarily. Everybody develops at a different time, and to have a long-term view. And I mean, I look back to our own career. I certainly would not be in a position at 18, 19 to play in the SHL, arguably the best, you know, league outside the NHL, I feel. Mm. You know, it's going to take time. And for us, it, you know, took some grooming through college and into first couple years of pro. But, you know, if you have your mindset on doing something and you approach it with like a singleness of purpose, then, you know, you can achieve anything. And I love seeing that for these guys. I mean, I'm just so excited for Nils, you know, and his all the talk about him over in the Canucks right now, and you know,
Höglander, we have to say to all the listeners so they know him.
Nils Höglander, who exactly, you gotta let everybody know who Nils Höglander is.
Okay, I think they know, sorry.
Exactly. No, I mean, and it's not just, you know, those are the few names that I can mention now, but I mean, look at Leon coming from college, or Cody Curran's journey, and you know, Ted and becoming as prolific of a centerman in the SHL, I think one of the best in Europe, and Roman Will, and I mean, the list goes on. It's just like, it's so fun to see these guys excel.
Yeah, but, and I mean, you were the guy that signed those players, but you do have help in your position as general manager of Rögle. And I'm thinking about Christopher Malm here, your assistant. Can you tell us about your relationship and how you two guys work together?
You know, Christopher has been with our organization nearly as long as I've been back here. You know, I met him actually one of my first days on the job, knowing that it was going to be a tall order with only one person. And I think, you know, most teams in this league have two people that work together. And I think it almost has to be the case. Christopher and I work very much alongside each other. We sit across from each other in our offices, and you know, it can be a lonely position if it's one person, and you know, you get wrapped up in your own thoughts. So to have somebody there to help assist you in all the things that you need to do, and to bounce ideas off of back and forth about players and our approach, you know, it's super important, and you know, couldn't have done you know, what we've done and been where we're at right now without Christopher. He's kind of been in the shadows a little bit, but try and put him out in front as much as possible, and make sure everybody, you know, sees and knows that, you know, he's a huge, huge part of our organization.
Yeah, and he's young too in a hockey context. Do you see him as a future GM of maybe Rögle or any other SHL team?
Absolutely. You know, there's a lot to learn for sure on the hockey side. I think that's an area that's you know, it takes time to establish yourself and your views as a manager or what you see, but you know, he and I are very much in line in our thinking, and I see him having a really bright future, and know that there's already some interest, as there should be, you know, because of the journey he's been on here and the job he's done.
And as you said, he kind of works in the shadows, so you know him very well. What would you say are his strengths as a assistant GM?
Yeah, he's very thoughtful, and you would say deliberate in his comments. You know, I tend to talk, as you know. He's a guy with fewer words, I think, but when he does say something, he's got, you know, a reason behind it, and I think that's a really, really good quality to have. He's quite reflective of players and their game and how they would impact our team. Just in general, really fun to work with a guy like that, you know, you have trust in, and that sees the game very well, and sees especially young guys in their potential.
And looking forward here, I think we have a month to the transfer deadline. Are you guys thinking about adding something to this team before that?
Yes, I've said that, you know, a few times in different articles, or if it was interviews or whatnot, that, you know, this team, all of our players, you know, have the ambition to win, and it would be no different, you know, if we were in a different spot in the standings right now. But certainly with where we are, we've got an opportunity this year, and we only have 13 forwards under contract right now, including Melker, who just recently signed his rookie contract. So having lost Nils, Craig Shearer is now left the team. We are looking to add some depth and some strength to our lineup, and we're, you know, working hard at doing that, and just owe it to everybody, the coaching staff and the players and this organization, to make sure it's the right type of person, right type of player. It's a unique in the hockey environment right now, with the AHL starting up, NHL camps just being finalized, and rosters being put down on paper. So yeah, I think there's going to be some options become available.
But if I look at your team right now, I see a team that can play in so many different styles. I mean, you can play tough and gritty, you can play technical and smart, you can play fast and effective, and it's always so fun to watch Rögle play. So in a tactical point of view, what foundation do you and Cam stand on?
We foundation. I think, you know, it's a combination of all the different coaches and ideas that we've gathered over the years, and you know, that's I think the best way to put it. But you know, overall, I think all of our coaching staff, you know, they have it's certainly not just Cam and Yanni and Magnus and Corey do a awesome job of breaking down different games, different teams, and their approach. You know, what works best for us against that? How do we respond if, you know, we say get down in the game in the first period, or if we're up? And, you know, there's one thing to be able to identify that as a coach. It's another to have a group of players that are able to, you know, listen, to take that information and execute on the ice. And, you know, again, it's all about the players, man. I mean, there's nothing more needs to be said. It's about having intelligent hockey players that, you know, want to do it as a group, want to trust, you know, the coaching staff have done their homework and, you know, believe in their vision. And, you know, when they call an audible on the bench and say, boys, we're opening up here, are we going to, you know, make this tactical change?
But Chris, I think that you're so humble. I mean, you signed the players, Cam and the coaching staff coached them. I mean, you have some part of their success, right?
Well, I mean, I'm sure having a fun time watching these guys. I think I have the easy job and the tough job in a lot of ways. I have to make some tough decisions, and those are never easy. And I also get to make some guys' lives, greatly improve, you could argue, by giving them, you know, the chance to play pro hockey and also for, you know, to be paid for it. So, you know, it's a responsibility. Don't take lightly. I mean, the first thing, you know, you got to remember too, is that there's probably 80-90 people, I think, close to in this organization as a whole that are employed by one thing, and that's this, and that's hockey. And, you know, to be able to maintain everybody's job, and fortunately in this league, in this country, you got to be in the SHL. Otherwise, there's a lot of changes that will be made, and that's, you know, that's can be heavy on a lot of people's shoulders, a lot of sports chefs' shoulders. And I'm very thankful right now it doesn't seem to be so heavy on us. But, you know, that's risk number one, is staying in the league. And, you know, it means you gotta put the work in every day and really, really, you know, not be weighed down by it, but be aware of that. And, yeah, I mean, I like to think I have a part in it, for sure. You know, wouldn't be doing this if I didn't enjoy it though, and didn't love the opportunity to work with guys. So, there's a lot of fun to it, and I never had a job in my life. So,
okay, that's the way you put it. You have never had a job in your life. Okay.
Have not. Okay. Have not.
When you and Cam accepted to join Rögle as the leaders and not players, did you have to step on any toes to get the change that you wanted?
Yeah, you do. You do have to step on some toes. You do have to, you know, make some tough calls, have some tough conversations with players, with staff. Some of those conversations are actually a lot easier if you deep down believe like that guy just does not share, you know, the same values that I do. Won't name any names, but you know, it was easier to have those conversations than the ones where you really, really, you know, appreciated the way a person approached their own craft, loved them as a person. It wasn't a good fit hockey wise, and especially those guys that have been here for a long time. Just want to make sure you treat them as well as possible on the way out the door, and aid them in trying to find another solution. So we had to step on a few toes, but you know, for the most part, there was buy-in from day one.
When you talk to players that you are interested in, how do you sell Rögle to them? I mean, what do you say to make them feel convinced that they should join the team? What do you say about the Rögle's DNA? What is that?
It's a great question. Rögle's DNA, I mean, I think we're you know, every day creating that and then kind of laying the gene profile down, or whatever you call it, the code for what is Rögle hockey, because we don't have, unfortunately, a bunch of banners in the arena to look up to and say, that's how we did it. We've got, you know, we've definitely had success in different different levels over the years here, but there hasn't been, you know, a championship in the SHL or Elite Serien One. So, you know, that's something that we work with every day, and you know, that's it takes you know, a million things that add up to make a successful team, and it's putting the, you know, the pieces together every day, trying to push, getting better, trying to improve. How can we squeeze and a little bit more out in this area, in that area, and you know, just constantly looking to improve. And you know, I think those things are maybe undervalued, you know, as a whole, when you look at the big picture and say, okay, here's where we're at. We've got a long way to go to win, but you know, if you break it down into small steps, and that's how we approach it right off the bat here, to break it down into very small pieces. You know, that's the way to look at it. I mean, a quick story, and I think it's, you know, I can just talk here, and then yeah, probably not. Your listeners will log off and driving. So,
no.
You know, when we started the first day, I just still remember. You start with, you know, we came in with humor. I was actually on my I've told this story a few times, but I was on my honeymoon in Southeast Asia and watching the team, you know, every day have you know, injury problems, and they were struggling. They had losses rack up, and this is in the fall of 2017. And I had actually agreed to take this position a month before it was announced, and the team was set. So hey, couldn't do much. So went on my honeymoon, which was not going to be canceled again after I was injured. You know, that was requirement number one. But it was in Thailand and then Cambodia, and yeah, we were having a heck of a time. But seeing the team lose, it was like, oh man, I'm going to be working for an Elzenskan team. So we have to cut this short. And actually flew into Stockholm, directly into Angleholm, and bought some clothes at the airport. And Cam picked me up, and we started on that Monday morning. I think it was the 19th of November. And we walked in, and, you know, there's a lot of guys with pretty sunken down postures in the chairs and long faces. And, yeah, I mean, there was a reason for concern still early in the year. But I think we were maybe 11 points after 19 games and 16 points back from the next team, and not looking so good. And, you know, the first thing we did, we grabbed everybody assemble upstairs at 8 a.m. and 8:30, whatever it was. And we said, you know, guys, if you think you're screwed before, you just hired a GM that's never done this before and a coach that's never won a game in the SHL. And that got some smiles. And then we, yeah, I just said, hey, we're in it with you guys. We got a hell of a group here. And we did. I mean, we had some very good players that, you know, had terrific rest of the seasons. But, you know, if we went in and said, hey, guys, just so you know, I mean, I don't want to scare anybody here, but we got to go 500 the rest of the way or else we're screwed. That would not have, you know, that would not have been accepted too well.
Oh.
So it was like, you know, we got a game tomorrow. This is how we're going to approach it. It's going to be about energy and doing it, you know, having confidence in yourself and do it the right way. And nobody is going to get us out of this. It's everybody in this together in this room. And, you know, the guys had it in them, and the coaching staff, I think Cam did a terrific job bringing that, you know, new energy. And, you know, we went, I think, nearly 500 the rest of the way, and climbed our way out. And I think, what did we finish, 10th there that year?
11, I think.
11? Yeah, yeah, I was. So. Yeah, 11, exactly. And we're 10 points back of making the play-in. So it was a rewarding first spring there.
Okay. So you interrupted your honeymoon to be the GM of Rögle. That's interesting. But I want to go back here, Chris. If you just had one phrase to explain Rögle's DNA, what words would you use?
Humble, hardworking, intelligent, competitive.
Okay, that's great. Is there those words standing on in the locker room?
You know what, we're not so big on the kind of the words, because to be honest, our locker room right now has got two jackhammers and a and the carpet torn up, and I mean it's a mess. We're in the junior room, so yeah, there's some remodeling going on, but there's some phrases around the room that have been installed, and some words that you know, I think have meant some things to players, but overall, my favorite one is going out the door onto the ice. It says, it's amazing what we can accomplish when no one cares who gets the credit. And that's, you know, to me kind of sums it up. You know, we, you got to have that, you know, any successful team, especially in hockey, you know, where it's a group of usually 20, 20, 25 guys, everybody's going to give something along the way. And, you know, as soon as you give up that concern for who gets that credit or the benefit of having put the puck in the net, you know, it really is rewarding to see when, you know, everybody's happy for each other for their own successes.
Ja, men där hör ni pulsen slå, och Chris Abbott ska precis som övriga gäster genomgå den här delen där han måste svara på snabba och svåra och kanske lite trixiga frågor så snabbt han kan också. Och sedan har jag lagt fram några fördomar, 5 till antalet, om Rögles sportchef. Och nu kommer jag switcha till engelska här igen då. Okej, så Chris, are you ready for this?
Sure am.
Best GM in Sweden, in your opinion?
Henrik Evertsson, I would say.
Name a skill you have that we don't know about.
Can fly an airplane.
Oh, that's nice. Best signing you ever made?
Best signing I've ever made. Say Cody Curran.
Yeah, that's an obvious answer, right?
No, it's not.
Okay.
But it's one that I think a lot of people may agree with, but not obvious. There's been a lot of really, really good guys that we signed, and probably, Cody is one of those for sure.
Worst signing you ever made?
Will not answer that one.
Okay, you don't want to comment on that?
Worst signing I've ever made. I mean, I have them for sure, but, I think the ones I'd like to do over again, but... Because of the circumstances, you know, like Matt Anderson played 2 periods, I think it was, for us. Unfortunately, his career was ended first game in. But those are the things. That's what happened. I wouldn't necessarily say it's the worst signing, just the way it worked out. But I hope he's not listening to that. Matt's a great guy.
Okay. No, I don't think he will. But are you ready for the preconceptions?
Sure.
It was quite tricky, actually, to write them down. But we will start. You could actually do this podcast in Swedish.
Yeah. De ska ta lite mer tid, men
Nice.
Vi försöker.
but it feels like Cam is quite better in Swedish than you are, right?
Yeah, I would agree with that. He's would not say forced, but he has a Swedish wife, Malin, and they speak Swedish at home with the kids. And he's done a great job working on his Swedish, and is much more fluent than he gives make people aware of.
Your wife, Kendall, she's from Canada, right?
She often says that, but she's American.
Okay, she's American. Okay.
Yeah, the last 4 years she has said that.
Okay.
No, Kendall's from Michigan. We're about an hour and 15 minutes apart. So it's been, it's been great. She's been over here. We've been together for the last 10 years and married for 5. She's been, I think, like everybody in my position, been as involved as any spouse could be. She knows names that I can't recall often, if it's an agent or whose agent player player has, or, you know.
Okay.
So she's put up with me since we started this whole operation.
Do you think that family situation, with you having a North American family and Cam having a North American Swedish family, do you think that will... affect you in any way in the future, in the direction you will take in your career?
It's possible, but I don't, I don't really think too much about the future. I know Cam has arguably more roots already put down, but at the same time, I mean, we plan and want to continue living in Sweden. It's been home for us here, so, you know, hopefully we can continue to live in Sweden, and that's been our last dozen years, 10 years together, so nothing different.
Your favorite hockey analyst in Sweden is Niklas Wikegård.
That's true.
Okay.
He's I think everybody everybody sees the charisma that Nicholas has, and he's just a terrific hockey personality and has given so much. I mean, love seeing him when he comes to the games, and he's one of many, though, to be honest with you. There's Sonny Lidstrom, there's a terrific forgetting a lot of people that I enjoy working with, but Nicholas Wiegegaard's awesome.
Have you liked Nicholas throughout your career as a player as well? I mean, he has strong opinions about stuff.
Yeah, he does. I like that. I think, having more with strong opinions, but I think just as importantly is, I think everybody needs to try and do is to understand somebody else's position. And he's always done an awesome job of making you feel that your views are valid and listening. He may not agree with you, but he gives you his ears. I think that's cool. I mean, the guy is just he's awesome. Yeah. He's awesome.
He's passionate. Yeah.
Yeah, he is.
Nowadays, you actually prefer blueberry jam over maple syrup when you have pancakes.
I like my blueberries in my pancakes with maple syrup.
Ah,
so combination.
Okay. It's a mix there. Okay. what is the meal called in Canada with fries?
Poutine,
right? Yeah. It's cheese and gravy, right, on fries? Or?
It is.
Sounds
I have
nasty.
Not had, it does. It's a calorie bomb, that's for sure. I have not had poutine in years, though. So, not my. Although I don't, I don't disapprove of it. Just usually I like to. Yeah, try and maintain some level of decent food going in your body.
Yeah. Well, what do you miss the most about Canada?
My friends and family. Just having grown up there and having a big family and such a close connection to everybody there. Just to, not being able to do those things with your friends and your family and seeing their kids grow up and, you're not there a part of it. But, we've been blessed to have a chance to live here and if we could move everybody over here, that'd be even better.
But you have lived in Sweden for 11, 12 years now. What differences and similarities do you see between Sweden and Canada, and also the hockey-wise?
Yeah, there's a lot of similarities. Both socialist countries. I think the way things are done here in Sweden is actually it's done better.
Okay.
There's in a lot of different areas of life, but. It's just the quality of life here in Sweden for, you could say, I know there's a lot of people that are struggling, especially during this year, but in Sweden here is so high. There's, education is taken care of course, through taxes, but, through university, and you have healthcare and, all these things we assume is kind of universal here, but definitely not the case in the States and a lot tougher to receive in Canada. It's just a quality of life and just the attitude and the health of people. And, I think the Scandinavian way, in particular Swedish way, is just, I think, the best way of anybody doing it in the world.
You wouldn't describe yourself as superstitious, but you always start with the right sock when you dress yourself after your non-negotiable 7 a.m. alarm.
You know what? You could have gone with the left, but you nailed it with the right. Always start with the right. Always tied the right skate up first. Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. That's what. I'm not gonna fold, pack up the tent, and go home if that doesn't happen. If I forget to, but yeah, no, I'm not too superstitious. So,
okay, but I feel that you are. I don't know you, but it feels like you are a routine guy. Is that correct?
Somewhat. Yeah. Yeah, definitely. I don't mind breaking it up, but
yeah. In what way would you say that?
Yeah, I think anything you do in life, if you want to have success, it's got to become a habit. So just try and be, try and make things a habit in your daily kind of routine, and then it just becomes the way it happens, the way it works. So whether that's getting a workout in before lunch, or getting up at a certain time, or doing something, making sure you do something before you go to bed or whatever it is. So yeah, fairly routine, but much more so this year, not being able to travel and have some variety in your day to day, that's for sure.
But so the routine makes the player and the person.
I think like any athlete, you've got to be aware and of how you prepare your body, how you what you put in it, the way that you treat yourself mentally. I mean, those are all kind of habits that you build up, and I think that's just kind of the way that you prepare every day. And yeah, try and do the same here after the playing career is over.
Even though Cam is actually 4 minutes older, sometimes it feels like you are 4 years older than him.
No, that's not true.
That's not true. Okay.
No, I think we're both very, very much in as equals here, both in age and in our standing, and yeah, it's
okay.
That would be a misconception.
Okay, I see. But what thing separates you the most, you would say, in your personalities?
What separates us the most? It's a good question. Probably best asking somebody else. There's the jackhammer I was talking
about. Yeah, I hear it.
Hey, a great year for construction here in Engelholm. I mean,
yeah, absolutely.
You know, we can't have anybody in the building anyways, and we're putting another bowl on it and a bunch of seats. So,
okay, so it's new arena for the 21-22 season then.
Exactly. It's by design. It's great. You know, we can't, I don't know how we'd do it otherwise with this being full of people. So okay. Good time to do it, you know?
Yeah, but let's swim back to the question about you and Cam.
Yeah, good. I was trying to divert that one.
that's a good one.
You know what? I think just as it is right now, I've got to have maybe a longer term perspective on everything. Cam's kind of more here and now and in the day, just, you know, because of the nature of our jobs. But yeah, we're both very similar. We both have a competitiveness that I think would be our probably biggest attribute, and try and be humble and treat people as well as we can. So yeah, that's
I guess
similarities are more than the differences.
Okay, but I guess you have been compared through all of your life, from the start in Canada to this day. And maybe this is a stupid question, but do you think that you could do Cam's work and Cam could do yours? And it would be as good as it is right now?
Yeah, that's a good question. It'd be fun to try that out. I mean, I sure miss being around the team as much as he is. You know, it's a bit of a shocker going from playing and being in that environment to boom, you know, seeing, you know, most of your jobs in front of a computer or on the telephone. So yeah, I'm jealous of the work he gets to do. I would like to try that, but no, he could do my job, you know, absolutely.
Okay.
No problem. He's, you know, and there's a lot of crossover. Of course, we talk quite often about, you know, teams are facing how we approach it, and he and all the coaches are very much involved with prospective players that we're talking about, or you know, how conversations with agents, not necessarily discussing that with them, but this is a collaborative effort for sure. And I think one of the strengths of our organization and the way that we've done things is that we've got a good integration between the coach and the GM, and a trust there that I would say is probably more than any other in the league here.
But after you guys ended your playing careers, did you have the ambition to be a general manager and Cam the same, but as a coach?
Cam was already coaching in Växjö. Yeah, when he stopped, I think he was searching for that and found it with an opportunity there in Växjö. I continued rehabilitating from my injury in HV 71, excuse me, and was working as a player development, kind of volunteering there until I was given this opportunity. So I had hoped to do something in hockey. I mean, it'd be a damn waste to have spent 35 years doing something and then say, to heck with that. But that was a very real possibility too. I mean, there's, you're all in playing hockey and all of a sudden you're not. And then it's like, okay, what are you doing now? Was it business school, or are you going to become a pilot, or are you going to become a lawyer? What are you going to do? And the best possible opportunity came along to do this, and it was a no-brainer.
Då ska vi ta avrunda. Inte riktigt än. Vi har ju faktiskt faktarutan att gå igenom också med Chris Abbott. Och det är ju helt enkelt för att syftet med den här avslutande delen, det är ju för att lära känna honom ännu bättre som människa och sportchef / spelare. För han har ju en väldigt fin spelarkarriär bakom sig också. Med ett guld i HV71, bland annat 2017, som vi säkert kommer prata en del om. So, Chris, are you ready for this last part in the podcast?
I am. Go for it.
Nickname?
Oh, the only one I could think of is is Commander. I had a teammate in HV71, a good friend of mine, Ryan O'Byrne, who called me the Commander. So
that's a good one, right?
Commander. I didn't mind it, but it was kind of just between us, so I didn't really catch on anywhere.
But I mean, I feel that there's some power behind that.
The commander
and the captain.
I think he was being a little generous when he gave it to me, but I took it.
Okay.
Could be because Kendall made him dinner every night, it seems, so okay. Yeah, it'd be nice.
Age?
37 last time I checked, yeah.
Okay. Closing down on that forward line, right?
I am. What have you done with your life at that point, right?
I mean, you have a really good playing career in Sweden, and it started well in the Rögle here. As a
I'm okay.
Manager,
I'm not. So. I'm not on suicide watch. You don't need to.
Okay. I tried to praise you there for a while.
Yeah, help me up off the ground.
Exactly.
No.
Yeah. Car.
I drive a Skoda. Geez, what is it? Kodiaq.
Okay. That's quite funny though, because I would say that maybe 60 or 70% of the guests that I have in this podcast drives a Skoda. So that's a hockey thing, I guess.
Yeah, they are a great sponsor.
So are you any interested in cars or something besides hockey? I mean, it feels like you are a true hockey nerd, if you excuse me.
Yeah, no, I mean, I'm very passionate about hockey, but for sure now it's become less time being able to put towards these other things, but there's other interests, and I wouldn't say try not to be one-dimensional, but I mean, you may be aware we Cam and I have an interest in flying, and we've got an amphibious airplane back home that haven't had nearly enough time to fly. Our dad's been our father's been taking care of that, except for the bills, they come this way. he's been awesome, and so we got the airplane back home that fly, and love to fish and do some hunting and spend some time, you know, with the buddies back home, and camping and canoeing and these things that don't get done anymore. But it's not just hockey, but it's fun having hockey on the mind all the time. I would say the biggest interest outside of hockey right now is my 2.5-year-old daughter Magnolia and my wife Kendall, and you know, hopefully being able to travel with them this coming year here.
Yeah, but do you know which Swedish superstars that has a flight certificate?
Swedish superstars that have flight certificates.
Yeah, superstar in hockey. Yeah.
Superstar in hockey has their flight certificate. Yeah, geez, I'm trying to think of the guy right now.
He wants to be a
pilot
after his playing career.
I know, rushing. I was Kovalev was a pilot, believe, but I can't remember a Swedish. Who would be that?
He's born in Örnsköldsvik. He recently won the Stanley Cup.
Edmund?
Yeah,
Edmund. Exactly. Yeah, is he really? Right on.
He's really interested in the flights and being a pilot.
Cool.
So, yeah. Do you or Cam have the flight certificate?
We do. We've got our private pilot's license.
Okay.
Been probably a couple hundred hours, 250 maybe. I can't recall exactly how much of my flight to log, but it's fun, man. That's a drug too. That's a drug that you're allowed to take. It's exhilarating.
A big dose of adrenaline, I think.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Yeah, exactly.
Do you make more than a member of the Swedish Parliament, and that amount is 65,000 kronor?
No, I do not.
You do not. Okay, interesting.
Hope to.
I think
not at the moment.
Okay, but I think from the outside, I think a lot of people in the hockey community thinks that a general manager for a SHL team is earning around 65 or over that. But
yeah,
you don't.
I think so. I mean, I think it's that's probably the case, but I anticipate so, and I won't speak to my contract or any of the players' contracts, but I hope that's not, you know, and it won't be the case for the entire time doing this. But I've been very fortunate to have a very, rewarding career as well. And, we're also, I've had some help with the post career after an injury and whatnot. So it hasn't been the most demanding aspect of the job, but that would be untrue.
But you and Cam signed a long contract with the Rögle. I think it was in March, right? This 2020.
Yeah, we did. We had 3 years originally on our on our contract, 3.5, I guess it was, after starting in November, and then extended here this spring for another couple of years after this one.
Yeah, now the contract expires in the, I think, the spring of 2023. Do you see yourself being in Rögle after that contract?
I hope that at that point we've got some, you know, some have had some success and have had a banner or two in the rafters, and that's going to be extremely difficult and require a lot of luck. I can definitely see us. I mean, we've got our families here. We bought houses here. We love it here. But, you know, this hockey world is a pretty tough industry, and you go from the top to the bottom and vice versa very quickly. So I have never taken the approach of, you know, what are we going to be doing tomorrow or especially 3 years from now. It's been, you know, take care of today and make sure you're doing things the right way and putting the work in and hopefully having success, and then tomorrow will take care of itself. So, you know, I have the ambition to continue to improve upon my profession here and how we approach things, what we're doing. And I would, you know, I'll be very honest, would love an opportunity to move up and just as players do. I've never had a chance to work in an NHL team as a player. You know, we kind of got a sniff at at an AHL camp for a few days. But, you know, I think that, you know, anybody that is doing whatever they're doing, if they're not wanting to be the best at it and to strive to you know, move up, then they're not doing it maybe for the right reasons. So, you know, who knows? Maybe that opportunity comes. But if not, you know, I'd be very happy to be doing it here in Rögle. And it's been an awesome experience, and why we, you know, have committed ourselves for beyond the 3 years, 3.5 years originally.
Yeah, but you are open with that NHL is a clear ambition for you and Cam, and that you hope to get there someday.
Yes. I mean, I say be clear with it. I was clear with that as a player, too. And,
yeah.
And I hope that's for, you know,
I mean, it's
everybody
natural to
that.
Strive up, right?
Yeah, of course. I mean, you know, you see and you study and you see the, you know, the way success is being had in the NHL and different approaches. And, you know, you just love the way certain organizations work. And I mean, of course, you'd be honored to be a part of those too. But this has been this is our focus, and there's absolutely no focus on that. I mean, that's not something as a player you think about, like, where am I going to be doing next year? You live in the here and now and have success. And I'll say this, I mean, it's a great quote too that I cannot remember who I can attribute it to, but everybody wants to work with a winner, and nobody has a tough time getting a job after you win a championship. So I mean, that's
which is your favorite team in NHL?
You know, historically I've been in a Toronto Maple Leafs fan. You know, for many years, it seems to be trending positively right now, but also the proximity to Detroit. I mean, favorite player was Steve Yzerman growing up, and just watching the way he handled himself as a, you know, captain of a team and organization and the success they had. And it's a Detroit, man, that, you know, that's an awesome organization, and I think they're going to be very, very well positioned in the coming years.
Yeah, but you and Cam come from Sarnia, and understand, it's between Detroit and Toronto, right?
It is. It's just an hour north of Detroit, Michigan, and 2.5 hours, 3 hours west of Toronto.
But maybe this is a stupid question, but do you and Cam come as a package deal? Or do you see yourself going in two different directions in your leader careers?
Not a dumb question. I mean, for sure. I mean, we both played our whole careers together. And, you know, the first opportunity after being done playing, we've been working together. So, you know, I think there's definitely a certain, I want to say, you know, it's not necessary, but by any means, but there's been a strength there, especially in our roles, you know, having the same kind of vision and knowing, you know, exactly what's expected of each other and not having any ego or any type of a concern or, you know, issue with telling each other exactly what we think at the right times without, you know, concern of one of us being there tomorrow or not. So, you know, it's been, I think there is a strength in that. And, yeah, you know, maybe that continues in the future, maybe it doesn't, but, you know, we sure enjoy it right now.
but maybe it's easier to set your stamp on a club and a team when you have a guy with you that you know so well.
Absolutely, it's easier.
When did you peak?
That's good. Oh, when did I peak? As a player? Shit. Oh, man. I don't know. You try and improve every day. And I mean, it's such a cliche thing to say that you want to be the person you're going to be in 3-5 years, whatever it is. But, I probably playing wise, honestly, you go through your career and I still now at least see, there was a reason that you were able to play for as long as you did, because you were able to win face-offs and you're right-handed. Oh, exactly, right?
You had more than that, right, Chris?
Worked hard.
Yeah, you were good.
In the room.
Good in the room, okay.
Good in the room. That's what the buddies chirpy and say, but
is there like seasons with Luleå when you were captain? Maybe this year when you got to the final against Skellefteå, you lost 4-0 in that final, but I mean, you had a great season, and you had a good season. I think it was the year before when you scored 35 points. That was the 10-11 season, I think. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, I don't see any years as far as like, you know, especially points wise and teams and I mean, how as players, I'm honestly most proud of the final year in HV71 and the way that. You know, I dealt with as a player and as a leader, as a captain, a lot of adversity personally, being injured and having a tough hand injury and surgery and coming back from that, and then being a healthy scratch for the first time in my career, you know, right the first game of the playoff. That was a huge kind of hill mentally and emotionally to climb into. To put the team in front of yourself, I think is anything I could ever ask of any teammate as well. And just I'm proud of myself the way that was handled, and eventually had the chance to come back after, we had a player in David Ullstrom get injured after him being added late and then came in and played very well through the playoff series. And then, you know, right up until the final week, I think it was the first practice going into the finals, and was hit from behind by a teammate and broke my neck right before the final series. So, it was emotional up and down that whole year. But, I thought I handled it as best as possible and gave the team, a lot of myself. And, I'm most proud of that year.
Yeah, but that neck injury, how bad was it? Because when you hear someone breaking their neck, it sounds so devastating. So now when you look back, how bad was it?
Yeah, I mean, I had 3.5-4 millimeter displacement on my vertebrae, and I think one more millimeter is getting into the spinal cord. So I was very lucky. I have plate in my neck, screws and bolts or whatever into the vertebrae to fuse them together. I was so fortunate. I mean, you see the devastating, the impact that it could have on your life. And I'm just so thankful that it didn't obviously have that result and had the gods were with me, man, in that situation, because, I had my forehead felt like touched my chest, and you can hear the bones break in your, in your ear canal. And it was pretty damn scary.
Yeah.
Equally as dumb to skate off the ice too.
Yeah. But I think it was 18 months later that Tobias Forsberg, got paralyzed and had to end his career.
Yes.
When you follow that, did you feel more like thankful that that you had so much luck in that situation back in 2017?
You know, I can't even compare or have any type. I mean, of course, you feel lucky. I feel lucky every day. But Tobias has been, an inspiration for so many people, and the grace he's had in dealing with that. And I'm sure, you want to talk about mental toughness, really proud of, and I'm sure extremely difficult situation for he and his family. But for me, it just was an opportunity to take stock of what you've done and how thankful you are for what you have and your health, and just trying to try and recover from that as best as possible. And yeah, I was not obviously in my interest to try and continue playing after that. It was not going to happen. So
your biggest setback?
Yeah, that would probably be that would, you know, I would say that whole 2 month, 3 month period would be a time, very difficult time, you know, for me that I think, you know, you're stronger for because of it. And I'm very, very happy to have, you know, as sick as it is to say, to have a chance to go through a situation, not just like that, but everything leading up to it with, you know, not playing, being healthy scratched as a captain of the team, and, you know, still going and supporting the team and, you know, carrying equipment bags out to the bus and joining the guys to the road game when, you know, you could easily have gone home and felt bad for yourself.
Yeah, and I see that picture of you and Simon Janerud lifting, or is it Martin Törnberg?
Both maybe? Those guys, yeah.
Both of those guys lifting that Le Mat trophy to the air. And I mean, how fantastic does it feel to end your career with a gold medal around your neck?
Oh, it was extremely rewarding, you know, in its own way. And I know a lot of people, you know, I mean, you weren't playing in that final game, and I agree with you. I mean, I wish I was, and it was difficult to take. But hey, I mean, I'm just so thankful that I was part of that ride. And I guess the most difficult part was that I was on painkillers and couldn't enjoy the evening as much as as possible when we, you know, 3 days out of surgery. We won that, but no, that was amazing. Game 7, you know, at home in Jönköping, just thrilling. And we had a great, great group of players, and, you know, I very, very small part played, but I like to, you know, think I had some impact even in just rooting the guys on. And, you know, even if it is, you know, I remember Christopher Torngren is also a healthy scratch earlier in the series, and just riding the bike with them and saying in the playoffs and saying, you know, they're just waiting for when they need us most kind of thing. And going into that third period, I think it was the third period that I went down into the dressing room and told Torngren that he's going to score the tying goal, and he scored it from the corner.
Whoa.
You know, that right up underneath the goalie's shoulder. And then we obviously came and won in overtime. So, man, that was makes your skin crawl. What a group of guys and team. That was a fun year.
Mm. But if we look at your general manager period here, and if we talk setbacks, I don't know if this was a setback, and you have to correct me if I remember this the wrong way, but in your first full season with Rögle, the 18-19 season, it was a really tough fall for you. I think that you were last in the league for a time there, and you had just one win in 7 games or something like that.
We did.
And how did that change you? And are you grateful today that you had that experience?
Absolutely, absolutely. I mean, you learn very little about yourself and about your team when, you know, everybody's patting you on the back. Mm. I mean, that's the toughest thing to you know, to take the you know, maybe the admiration or the support or the respect, whatever people are giving you when things are going well. But when shit's hitting the fan, you know, and everybody's looking at you know, what's going wrong, to, you know, to get through that and to come out the other side of it makes so much stronger. And, you know, I got to give a huge amount of credit to our coaching staff for kind of looking, you know, internally, for, you know, Marcus Thorsen at the time to give and show so much support from our board here, just saying, guys, stick with it. We believe in your approach. And I mean, the fun thing is too, I mean, look at it, like, we were playing really good hockey, and, you know, advanced stats wise, we were just losing games.
Yeah.
I mean, we were, we, you know, got off to a very poor start there, but, you know, it wasn't unlike, you know, some other teams that have been playing well, but just hadn't been winning. And we knew it was going to turn, and it's a bounce off a foot or a leg or whatever. And that's what it was. And we ended up turning things and going on a run there and going the other way. So, yeah, that was it could be a little bit hairy. Of course, you know, they gave us the responsibility here, and things didn't start off like it was looking too well. But, you know, overall, it was the best thing that could have happened in the growth of this team, because, you know, as individuals, everybody, you know, we try and remind, you know, in those type of situations, you look in the mirror first, and, you know, there's nobody's getting you out of this. There's no pointing fingers. Nobody looking at anybody else. Is what can I do better? What can I do more for the team here to pull us, you know, turn this around and pull in the right direction?
Yeah. But how have you and Cam changed since that period?
Yeah, when we came in, we were quite hard, you know, to deal with maybe in some ways about how we wanted things to be done. And, you know, at that time, I think it was the right approach because it was all hands on deck.
Yeah, this can you give
around.
Some example, Chris, for our listeners?
Yeah. Okay. For instance, you know, getting feedback, the coaching staff from our players and saying, like, Cam, you got to, you know, would say, be more prepared, say in delegating responsibility to the coaching staff. You got to give, you know, the guys a little bit more room to do things that they're naturally able to do instead of just, you know, driving it down them. And Cam having the maturity to say, okay, I hear you. If you guys think that's going to help, you know, you perform better, then I'm willing to do anything. I don't have any skin in the game here. You know, I don't have an ego that I'm too proud of. I mean, if that's going to help, I'll do it. And I think everybody took that approach. Everything. I think there's, you know, and if, keep in mind too, it's not, you know, it's not all bad. It's not all good at any point in time. It's somewhere in the middle, and just to keep fighting away.
Yeah, and I guess that the success you have had since that day, you, that gives you maybe a cooler temper, or it's maybe a relief that you have climbed through the league table here for the last two seasons, that maybe in that way you have changed as well, if you know what I'm searching for here.
Definitely Cam's and both of ours, of course, he's on TV all the time, and just his temperament on the bench and his calmness, he's something he's worked on a great deal, and I give him a huge amount of credit for. And I think a lot of referees and other players, our players, have said, you know, he's been more, say, in control, if you want. I love that intensity. I think, you know, it's something that he can tap into when he needs to. You know, we both of us can go a little hairy if we need, but I mean, he's done a good job of keeping it in check, and I think that's allowed the players to execute at a higher level.
Your favorite spot in the world?
Oh, a cottage up in Northern Ontario, secluded. So cell phones don't work, fishing, canoeing, beers.
Sounds great.
Yeah, it is.
Do you have any favorite place here in Sweden?
Yes. Where would be the favorite place here in Sweden? There's, I got a buddy in Jönköping. He's got a cabin. His father's, he got a cabin in the woods, just up towards Tronos. And I would say up there is a nice place to be.
A club you don't like?
Club I don't like. I mean, Helethia from the Luleå playing days. Respect them. Very, I mean, it's built on respect and admiration and jealousy, but Helethia. Although I think Forsell there is, and Nicholas, I mean, they've done a great job. They're awesome. I've just been bitter, I think, over those so many years of them winning.
Yeah. But that loss, we talked about it before here in the podcast, but losing 4-0 in that's 2013 final. I mean, how upset were you?
Pretty upset. I think quite clearly we saw after losing, I think the first two in OT, that this is going to be a tough hill to climb. And I don't want to, you know, say anybody folded the tent, but we knew that there was there was a team on the other side that was probably better suited to winning that championship. You know, with all the talent and the depth that they had. So, it was, I think, some tough series that we had going into that too. And we got there and it was like, oh man, this is going to be a battle. And it was, we battled right to the end, but it wasn't a surprise that they beat us.
Now as a general manager for Rögle, what teams inspires you? I mean, Skellefteå, Växjö, Frölunda have been, you can call them powerhouses, under the last decade. So where do you get inspiration from your colleagues or concurrents?
Yeah, I get what you're saying. I would say there's a number of teams, especially ones that have had a lot of success, and how they've done it. You know, like how did Växjö build their teams that they've won with for Lunda consistently? Skellefteå, 7 years, finals or whatever it was. Every you know, take examine the different aspects of their organizations and what have they done that's really worked. And I would say there's a little bit from each of those teams specifically, and in HV71, knowing that organization and the way that we did it there. You got to be ready to strike or put the gas pedal down when you get the chance. Not indifferent than the NHL. Having your window or your opportunity, and really pushing for it. So we've taken different aspects of it, whether it's how we build the junior program and trying to attract and have young guys come up and provide huge value to bringing in and retaining top players. I mean, there's all different aspects of it, and it all kind of fits together to be a top team.
Weirdest condition or clause you have ever had in a contract?
Weirdest condition or clause? There hasn't been too many. Try and keep it pretty clean, but weirdest
no,
one.
No money under the table?
I think that's pretty well not part of the SHL. It's well beyond that. But
more than the 90s, I think.
What's that, sorry?
More in the 90s, I think, in Sweden.
Yeah, probably. I mean, you got to count for everything here, Gosh, that's the strength of the country, the tax system. But give anybody a free meal, you got to pay tax on it.
Exactly. But did you have any weary condition when you were a player and when you talked to
one of the conditions back in the old deals, you couldn't ski. I know there's that in there. You couldn't ski during the season. You couldn't put yourself in a situation where you'd be a chance to be injured doing something that was deemed to be.
Yeah.
Likely to be harmful, so something like that.
But no weird clause that you have ever heard from a player that you have been in the contract discussions with?
I have not. That's usually a little bit of a red flag, unless it's or a guy are very superstitious. Okay. But sometimes guys want to use certain sticks or skates or try and accommodate, with flights and different things if you can.
Name someone in the hockey community that inspires you.
Oh, I would say two people also come to the top of the mind. Ken Holland in Detroit, now Edmonton, but his time in Detroit as general manager. Had a chance early in my career as GM here to watch some games in Grand Rapids in person, and saw him across the balcony or the upper bowl, and walked over and had the privilege of watching a couple periods with him. And he probably wanted to watch hockey, and all I wanted to do was pick his brain. But he was very, very welcoming and generous with his time, and gave me some really, really good advice. And one of the things he said that I'll most remember is that, one was that you end up with the players you end up with it for a reason. So don't dwell on the ones you don't work with. Something I've tried to keep in mind. And the other thing was to say, Chris, to do it your way. You have a vision that sounds like one that's, quite strong. Make sure you make decisions based on your gut, not what somebody else is saying. Because if they want your job, they'll apply for it, or you'll when you're fired. So that was cool, coming from the, best general manager in the history of the NHL, I guess you could say. Somebody that I've really looked up to, and I've had a chance to speak with over the last couple of years.
And he's at the Oilers right now as a general
manager, is.
Right?
Yeah, he is. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the other one was actually the guy that an idol of mine growing up, watching his approach and professionalism as a captain in Detroit, Steve Yzerman. Yeah. Not surprising, that he's I'd say been in position there in building Tampa, and been a big architect of that before they won. The way that he just approaches things and his vision, the way he treats people. I mean, if you ever get the chance to talk to him, it's like you're the only person in the room, and puts himself at your level or beneath you even, and values what you say. And those are the type of people that I'm sure are very inspiring to work with. And it's been fun, the few conversations I've had with them, just to try and not to say something stupid because you're a little bit nervous talking to him. But how great of a guy he is, and it's been fun to have a chance to work with this player there, and Maurice Sider. And I totally understand why they go a little bit off the board at the time to pick him 6th overall. And, it reflects kind of what he's trying to do there. And, if I want to call something, I'm going to say Detroit's going to be a cup contender in the next 3 to 5 years.
Yeah, and they have a bunch of Swedish players coming up here.
They Sreiman, sure do.
Jonathan Berggren, Theodor Niederbach, Elmer Söderblom. So they have a good talent bank right now.
Valeno now and Malmo and Sider. And, it looks good. Yeah. Future looks bright.
But I'm curious about that meeting with Haaland. When did that occur?
It would have been a few times, actually, but fall, I think it was 20, maybe spring 2018. It must have been that, because I usually try and get over to the States and watch some college hockey and AHL games 2 or 3 times a year. Until now, obviously, that's been a big part of doing this job, has been putting the time in, meeting people, laying the framework for, the foundation for relationships. If they don't work now, if they're not interested now, maybe later on, we'll get the chance to work together. And that's been a big part of it, just getting out there and building the kind of the Rögle brand here in Sweden and around the world.
And do you feel that there's a difference when you talk to other GMs or agents that players want to come to you now rather than before?
Yeah, I think so. I think comes with having success, and then also with players having success individually and moving on to the next level. You want to be a part of a team that shows that they're going to give you a chance to perform at a high level and help you achieve your own goals. And yeah, that's kind of the benefit, positive spin off of it.
Yeah, and you mentioned that you usually travel to North America to watch some college games under the regular season when the world is normal, I would say. But that has, I guess, been a tough cookie for you this season. And how does that affect you in the coming team building here for the 21-22 season?
Yeah, definitely. There hasn't been much hockey played in North America. So that's changed as well as in Europe, more limited season and not being able to travel. So a lot on video. We've been fortunate. We have a lot of pieces in place already, and we're happy about that. But we obviously got to be prepared for next year when it's coming, and hope to get that in place earlier than this past year. Certainly not have to go through the summertime wondering, who else is going to be added to the group. So, doing as much as you can from, where you're at, and to get out and watch games and meet people in Sweden as much as we can as well.
Name one thing you would like to change with hockey.
Good question. Fighting is becoming less and less. I think definitely more respect on the headshots. That seems to be improving. We'd like to change in hockey. I would like to change one thing. On the power plays, when you get a power play as a team, you should be able to decide which side the face-off's on. And that's I think, something that's coming down the pipeline.
Okay. A small but very important detail. I think.
It is.
Yeah. A team you would like to be general manager of?
Oh, Toronto Maple Leafs. That'd be cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you would say that Maple Leafs is your childhood club?
I mean, we'll spend every night they're on TV, probably watching with their, Cam or brother and sister or father, everybody. It's just kind of part of growing up in Canada. Toronto was our team, but things have changed too now. I mean, that's a tough market to be in, and I think they've done a hell of a job there so far, and Kyle Dubas is well on his way to having a lot of success there.
Yeah, and when you were growing up, wasn't Mats Sundin one of the biggest players in Toronto at that
time?
Yeah,
of course,
was he a favorite for you?
Favorite then, obviously Wendell Clark was there, and then there's, later on you had the Darcy Tuckers and those type of players, but Toronto has not had a very good team over the last number of decades. There wasn't a lot of success to watch in the postseason.
Where do you see yourself in 10 years?
Hopefully somewhere in hockey doing something like this. As I said before, not a job, it's just a lifestyle. It's so much fun and a privilege and rewarding and everything that you could hope for if you're not playing. I don't know.
So in Sweden or North America, or do you see yourself working in maybe in KHL?
Very possibly in Sweden. I'm sure North America would be a thrill as well, but yeah, again, don't try and work, look too far ahead. I never focused on that when I was playing, and I certainly won't do that now.
Would you like to manage a team in other parts of Europe?
I wouldn't rule it out if somebody's wanted to, you know. The job market's an interesting one, especially when you don't have one.
Exactly. Okay, so Chris, it's actually time to wrap it up now. And I have to say, I'm so thankful that you had the time to join my podcast for it's actually 90 minutes now. I said 1 hour to you, so I'm sorry for that.
No, I'm sorry for that. I could talk all day about hockey and Rogla, so...
Yeah, it's fantastic.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks a lot for joining. And where do you see yourself standing in maybe April or May when the playoffs final begins? Do you see Rogla there?
Hope. I do, and man, I'll do anything for these guys if we can find a way to, you know, to be playing at that time. Hopefully it's standing on the ice here after the season's over. That's a dream. You got to be able to say that too.
Absolutely. So thanks a lot, Chris.
Thank you. Take care.
Yeah, and ja, jag ska switcha tillbaka till svenska. Nu hoppar jag väldigt rapt här, men så blev det faktiskt. Så får jag be om ursäkt för min knackiga engelska, men jag hoppas att ni förstod i alla fall vad Chris sa. Det är därför ni lyssnar, för att få veta mer om mina gäster. Och det kommer fler trådarna under det här året, torsdagar varje vecka framöver. Så nu tackar jag och Chris för oss, och som alltid, adam.johansson@expressen.se för tankar eller funderingar. Säger vi tack och hej, och på återhörande igen.
Du har lyssnat på en podcast från Expressen. Ansvarig utgivare är Claes Granström.